Oh, well, plenty of food for thought there, and to give the first level of digestion, without conjuring up too gruesome an image, I asked Peter back to speak for 5 minutes, please.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I first of all say thank you to Jerry for this very interesting paper? And I know as a Liberal Democrat, we've always embraced a local income tax as our solution. I think, as I outline in my blog on the IWA website this morning, in a sense, the party's been moving away from that, not formally, but informally for some time, with Vince Cable advocating, another economist, of course, advocating a mansion tax, which, again, is a tax on wealth. And I think that, in a sense, the opportunity to bring in a local income tax was really when they abolished the poll tax, because it wouldn't have been such a painful transition as it would be now moved from a council tax to a local income tax. So I'm very interested indeed in this reform. And the suggestions in it, I actually very much support the idea of taxing wealth as opposed to income. I think that is a much more simpler way of actually getting a fairer tax system. Wealth, particularly in the form of property, can't move. People who can take their income elsewhere, particularly if you try to have different rates in England and Wales. And I think that is a problem which does need to be addressed. I think that the issue about the single person discount is also an interesting one. I think if you ask any politician, they'll tell you that the single person discount actually deflates the number of people on the electoral roll. The number of homes you knock on and find two people living there, but only one person is on the electoral roll because they don't really live there for tax purposes. They just happen to be visiting. It's actually quite a large number. And I think if you actually got rid of the single person discount as part of this reform, and actually, as I understand it, dampen down the effect on the higher bands if you did that, then I think you'd find also that the number of people on the electoral roll would rise, particularly in urban areas, and that would also have the impact, I think, of changing the distribution of revenue support grants towards those urban areas. That would be quite interesting side effects in terms of doing that. The one caveat I've got on this reform, and I only have the one, is in terms of the tax base, because I think if you combine this reform with the proposals in the Williams Commission, I think you have to really sit down and look at the tax base that the new authorities are actually creating. For example, Caerphilly, Torvine and Blaenau Gwent are mostly bands A, B and C. And you'd find that because those are such low tax base, and because you're effectively cutting the tax on that tax base, you would find those that authorities would have to have a very high council tax, because they wouldn't be able to rely on the higher tax bands to bring their revenue in. And it does seem to me that if we're going to go down this route, and I'm not particularly keen anyway on the way Williams has actually rearranged the local government map, if you were going to introduce this, you'd have to take that into account as part of the base, and have to start looking seriously at the tax base and the new authorities to make sure that was sustainable in terms of the income they were able to generate from council tax. Just two more points. I think Jerry didn't really touch on this, but certainly his paper also talks about stamp duty and landfill tax being collected by local government as a means of actually saving money in terms of the administration of those tax, giving local authorities an additional taxes which they can collect, which would then be pooled and redistributed in the same way as business rates. And I think that, again, is a very interesting reform, which I'd very, very much like to look at. And the second point, which is something I'm going to throw in myself, in terms of the business rate. In England, there are pilots looking at what is known as tax increment financing, which is effectively you allow a local authority to keep the business rates off a regeneration area, which they anticipate to get from regeneration area, which they can then borrow against to actually regenerate that area in the first place, if that makes any sense. So they borrow the money, they regenerate the area, and then they get the payments, the money back from the business rates. And I think that is something we should also be looking at in Wales as a way, an additional income to local authorities in terms of actually regenerating areas in Wales. And I think that's something which I'd like to look at as part of this reform as well. So that's my two penny worth on this thing. But again, thanks very much to Jerry for this very interesting paper.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Now, the perspective of the Welsh Local Government Association, which obviously doesn't speak with one voice, so an officer perspective on what he's heard today.
Well, thanks very much, Lee. And as Lee said, this is not a corporate response from the WLJ, because obviously leaders haven't had a chance to look at the paper. So sometimes they do speak with one voice. I should maybe
no,
add.
Usually, yeah.
I think by, you know, if I, when I advise leaders on this, you know, obviously I'd be giving them my view on what's a very good contribution to the debate on local taxation. It's usually quite a staid debate. It's usually a debate, an annual debate about council tax levels. Usually a debate that's characterised by maybe a little bit of political knockabout around collection rates and other kind of performance data like that. But I think WLGA leaders would kind of welcome this paper. I think maybe I picked up about four things. I think that positives that I'd say to leaders that they should maybe think about here. I think the idea of making the council tax more progressive is a good one, and I think Jerry sets out the evidence for that very well in his paper. Of course, many council leaders will know that, will cast their minds back to council tax revaluation in 2005 and what a painful time that was. But I think that my personal perspective on that was that it was actually a little better managed than maybe it could have otherwise have been. And I think the difficulty around the council tax revaluation was maybe one of expectations, because I remember at the time I think the Welsh government was saying, well, a quarter of households would actually move up the bands, a quarter would move down the bands, and 50% would stay in the middle. Now, that wasn't actually what happened in the end, because actually a third went up, 10% went down, and the rest stayed in the middle. So there was a little bit of controversy around that. There was Jerry's archetypal widows in large houses, I remember, loomed quite large in that debate, and there was quite a large amount of Welsh Government money put in to kind of phase in the revaluation in, so that people who were going up by more than one band were actually limited to one band every year. So if you were moving two bands up, it took 2 years to get there. And I think one of the leads me to the kind of second, good point that Jerry's making here about the idea of having a more strategic and integrated approach to not just property taxes, but thinking about income tax as well. That I think if I understood it correctly, what Jerry's saying here is, well, one way you could ameliorate the impact here is through thinking about income tax in a more strategic way as well, if you had the right powers and levers to do that. I think thirdly that the idea, again echoed by Peter, that local authorities could have some role in administering some of the things like stamp duty is a good idea, not least because all the expertise on tax administration lies out there in local authorities. They, not only do they collect £1.3 billion worth of council tax, they collect another £900 million worth of business rates as well. Experts in how to administer a tax system, and the legal implications of collecting those kind of taxes. And I think the infrastructure is already there. They don't necessarily, local authorities don't necessarily have to collect the tax and keep it and spend it. Like domestic rates, they could actually be collecting that on a national basis and actually essentially passing it back to local government. The fourth kind of positive aspect here, I think, is the council tax impact on council tax reduction scheme. Jerry rightly points out is quite a controversial welfare reform that's been. I always think devolved is not the word that UK government tries to sell it, but certainly the I think the UK government line is that they abolished the scheme and gave the funding to implement whatever support Welsh government wanted to put in place. But it is an expensive scheme. It costs £244 million a year, I think, on current estimates. No one's really too sure, to be perfectly honest. But it's a rebate scheme that is highly sensitive to the number of people. To two things. Firstly, to the number of people who claim the rebate. So it's linked to where the economy is, and secondly, it's linked to increasing council tax levels. So anything that helps and 50 million pounds, I think leaders might, they wouldn't quibble with Gerry about whether it's Welsh Government money or whether it's local government money. I'm sure it could be spent on local services as well as national services, but either way, it could be a way to keep the bill for that checked. Just a couple of points finally. I think the only issue leaders would maybe have with this kind of tax system is it does kind of tend to break the link with local accountability. There are every year there are annual pressures on local government budgets. Most of it may be accounted for in the local government funding formula. And I should add as well that depending on your definition of local authority expenditure, perhaps 20 to 25% of income comes from the council tax. So it's actually a good way for councils to actually pay for certain local pressures and that aren't reflected in the local government funding formula, and that's become, I think, increasingly so when we've started to see local government budgets reduce, and the kind of pact or bond now that councils have with their own citizens is that, well, we could keep this service if we maybe put council tax up by X% and like that. I know that's not a perfect process, but it's certainly part of the conversations that councils are starting to have a lot more with their households. So I think that's the only kind of drawback, that maybe indexing and setting this nationally would kind of break a link with local accountability. There's a lot more technical questions there. I think that maybe Peter's just alluded to, I won't go into any detail, business rates, impacts on the RSG formula, and finally, and Peter's mentioned this as well, what about the impact of the Williams Commission, that kind of glossed over slightly, not only the impact on local tax bases, but council tax harmonisation.
Okay, thank you, John. Susie, your thoughts, please.
Yes, can I just say thank you very much for your paper as well. Anyone who tries to answer the question of what on earth is a fair local tax deserves all the rounds of applause they can get, if you ask me. I was very interested in your opening remarks about this holistic view about how we deal with taxation in the round. The only problem I have with that, even though I think I think that's the right approach to take, is that if you want to change one part of taxation at some point in the future, it inevitably then has a knock-on effect with the other bits of taxation that you've brought into the holistic vision. And I don't suppose that's different from the situation we find ourselves in now with how to deal with taxes, but it's something that needs to be borne in mind. I agree with what John said as well about the local accountability element of this, because I think of all our taxes, council tax or any local tax is the one that is most closely associated with what it is raised for, and that is the delivery of local services. And to actually try and bring anything that confuses that connection, I think would be quite difficult. I imagine it'll be a connection that people would be quite keen to hang on to, because they can turn to their local council and say, you haven't collected my bins for X number of weeks, therefore I shouldn't be paying so much local tax. On the issue of stamp duty, I just wanted to raise this because even though I don't have the privilege of an academic economics background or indeed anything to do with local authorities, I've got some experience as a conveyancing lawyer. And I think the argument that stamp duty distorts the market, particularly with new builds, has been overemphasised, because developers are very, very good at introducing schemes which keep house prices high whilst managing, by way of cashback, just as a straightforward example, of diminishing the burden of the stamp duty on the individual buyer. And certainly house buyers find stamp duty very unpopular and see it not so much as a tax on expenditure, a tax on wealth, but a tax on spending. And that's something that perhaps hasn't come through in the paper. On the issue of banding, I get less vexed about the actual values attached to bands as long as there are differentiations between them. Frequent revaluation, apart from being disruptive and, as you say, very unpopular, actually affects the mortgage market as well, because mortgage lenders are very wary about lending money on valuations, which may change dramatically. And, of course, we saw the effects of that in the housing collapse, actually, that set in train the most recent recession. So how we deal with banding, I think, is a very fertile area for discussion. Probably one best dealt with very neutrally rather than trying to attach party politics of the past to it. With indexation, again, I think I'll just say I agree with John on this. There's an element of local decision-making that, certainly from my party's perspective, is very important. And even though I can see the advantages of indexation, that doesn't allow any local authority or community that's taking control of its own destiny to respond to quite big changes. So, for example, big new housing estates or major layoffs. There's an increase in unemployment in a given area. And that's one reason as well where I'd be a bit reluctant to sort of use exemptions as a particular target, because even though council tax is effectively a property-based tax, the idea of exemptions is that there's an acknowledgement of people's ability to pay in certain circumstances. So with the percentage discount of the single occupier, I can see why the widow's been overdone. But again, perhaps I can introduce into the argument the idea of family breakup, because certainly in my experience, again, as a lawyer, I didn't come across that many widows in big houses, but I did come across families that had split up and were stuck with the houses they bought as a family and were compelled to keep by the courts in order to have homes for their children. And in those circumstances, just because effectively a parent has been thrown out by process of law, is that really an appropriate opportunity to reduce that remaining family's income even further by getting rid of their single-person discount? Not having the academic and economic background to this, it also gives me the privilege of being able to ask a couple of dull questions. You made a strong point that the majority of homes in Wales are in the lower value bracket at the moment, and actually the high end, looking at the graphs you showed us, there aren't that many really, really expensive houses. If we can redistribute the tax burden in the way that you suggest, are there actually enough big houses to cope with where's the tipping point going to be? Is it going to genuinely be at point D?
Yeah, that's why the increase on the other houses has gone up as much as it has. The calculations underlying that graph are constant revenue calculations. So these are the changes that give you the same revenue. So you see, if you look at the percentage change down the bottom, it looks to be quite small. The percentage change at the top is very big. But that's entirely because of that. If the houses were uniformly distributed, then everybody could
have
the same.
Well, you've come to my question. Of course, houses aren't equally distributed.
Well, that's the point. But then, as set out, yes, there's enough money. These particular increases would give you the same revenue as you
could. Okay, well, my question was this, really. If you happen to be in a local authority where there's actually quite a high proportion of expensive houses, the amount of RSG they're going to be getting would probably be lower. Whereas if you're in an area, like most of the areas I represent, where there's quite a lot of low-value housing, the RSG is going to be higher because they will never get the benefit of money from the larger houses directly, because there aren't any large houses in their area. Am
exactly
I understanding
right.
that right?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
And that's the answer to Peter's point as well, that this will redistribute income, council tax income among local authorities because they have a different balance of housing. Unquestionably true. But you know, the Welsh Government operates the revenue support grant system in order to make sure that each local authority can meet its needs. So the implication would be that there'd be different flows within the revenue support grant system. But the point is, total revenue is the same under this reform. That's a design criteria. You designed it so you get the same revenue. So there's the same amount of money in the system, but yes, the flows would alter in order to rebalance. They'd have to. So it would be the revenue support grant that would look after Blaenau Gwent, because we're reducing the council tax on the houses that they've got, and then wealthier areas available more, and something would get less revenue support grant because their council tax would have gone up a lot. So there'd be a rebalancing through the RSP.
And I've got the final question on the back of that is, if the Williams changes, whatever they look like, happen, there's going to be, isn't there, being realistic, more power invested in bigger lumps of local government, and they're going to be wanting to use whatever our council tax system looks like by then as an opportunity to create money as well. So when we talk about a pattern that functions very well, where we're not actually talking about more money, it's the same amount of money you're swilling in a pot. We're going to be looking in the future at a situation where councils are going to be looking for more money, full stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a misunderstanding.
Thank you.
One of the things I'd just like to clear this up before we have discussion. There's nothing in this which reduces the discretion or accountability of local authorities. The indexation is not an alternative to them being able to set a rate.
Okay.
The indexation simply sets the base.
Yeah.
Now, at the moment, the base only changes every blue moon when the people pluck up their carriage and have a revaluation. All we're doing is turning that into a smooth process where the base goes up regularly. The council still has total discretion to say what rate they want to levy on that base.
Okay, well, thank you for
the only difference is that they don't have to keep increasing the rate because the base is frozen and all other prices are going up. Now the base is going up with other prices, so any change in the rate now is a real change. It's a policy decision they're making, not just to try and keep up, but because they want to collect more or less money. So I would argue it actually makes accountability better, because right now you get an increase pretty well every year because they have to keep up with prices. When that's not the case, because the base is going up, any change they're making is much more likely to be a real change, and it's transparent to the public. They can see, it's really going up this year or not. So I don't think it diminishes accountability. I would argue it actually improves accountability.
Okay, before we open it up, can we just nail this accountability point? Because Jerry's come back with a very strong counter to that point. Does that satisfy your concerns about accountability? It doesn't stop a local authority increasing levels. It just means they don't have to do it every year to keep up with inflation. So you still have choices that are clear that people can make.
My only response to that would be a theoretical one, is that the council wish to reduce council tax.
It would be free to do so. I mean, the key here is not the indexation, it's the way that the RSG operates. And I think it should operate in exactly the way that the Barnett formula should operate. In other words, the government says to the council, this is the standard rate of tax. If you levy that tax, you'll be able to meet your needs given the RSG grant we're giving you. Now, if you cut that tax, we're not going to change the RSG. We're not changing it. You get the same money. So if you cut the tax, you'll have less money. That's your choice. And that's the trade-off you've got to talk to your people about. Equally, if you want to spend more money, you've got to raise the tax. You're free to do it, because we're not going to change the RSG. I mean, that's the way it should operate, I think, to give genuine discretion to local authorities.
Okay, let's open it there. I think Jerry did a really good job at the start of distilling this and making this simple and bringing it back to first principles, and everybody else confused things again. So it's a complicated old argument, but very simple at its heart, I think. So questions to any of the panel or points of your own? And if the gentleman at the back, please say who you are.
Alan Peace. I just wanted to inject a few extra ideas, that's all. It's partly based on the fact I lived in Australia for 25 years. What was said at the start about people being averse to taxation on wealth, that's not just this country. It seems to be very strong in all English-speaking countries. In Ireland, for example, got rid of rates totally. Australia doesn't have debt duties. But some of the things I think Australia might find quite interesting. Queensland just levied the rates, the local authority, on the unimproved value of the block of land, which might sound strange, but it did give people incentive, no disincentive, to build a bigger house. There was a flat bottom level of rates, which reduced a lot of administrative costs. The valuations just would change automatically every few years by the government on the basis of information from the property sales. Because there was most people paid a flat bottom rate. There were some separate charges for sewage and water, of course, also for garbage collection. So the element of fee for service came in that way. I just want to inject that as sort of some extra
Okay, thank you. Kathleen, introduce yourself, please.
Kathy Owens from Darren. I remember 2005, when I was in fabulous Essex, and just on the politics of it, if I remember rightly, all of the parties could see the sense in the Reed violation, but also the putting the extra band on the top note. Until the narrative around, you know, effectively middle-class pensioners who vote started sort of dominating, and if I remember rightly, the opposition parties then were against it. So my position, I suggest, is that there'll need to be some very strong coalition. It'll have to be in a couple of different manifestos. There'll have to be a majority government in order to push this through. I don't think it could be done, you know, tomorrow before the tools were in place, because you need a greater working majority to be able to ensure it goes through because of that middle-class pensioner issue.
Just on Peter, on the crude politics of it.
I was there too, yeah.
Looking at Jerry's graph, it does strike me that if those who are going to have the biggest pain are going to be the people in the rich houses, they tend to live in the marginal constituencies. So just not the crude politics of this just kill this at the start.
Right. Well, first of all, I think my understanding of the graph is that doesn't take account of the abolition of the single-person discount, and that would actually mitigate the sort of sharpness of the rise.
Well, you could use it to mitigate the sharpness.
And I think Jerry was also talking in terms of other tax reforms as well. I think you'd have to finesse it and you'd have to phase it in. But I think in general, it is a reasonably good way, it's a way forward which we want to look at. But again, Cathy's right about what happened in 2005. I mean, you know, when the Cardiff Centrals, the other King Coids, and started to go up in arms about the increase in tax, and there was an opposition, we're very much opposed to it. And obviously, whatever you do, there's going to be a strong opposition. But you know, clearly, we'd have to look at how we could phase this in to actually ease the pain.
I think phasing in, you know, such a big impact is obviously what would have to happen. The beauty to me of indexation is you're boiling the frog slowly. You know, you're not jumping in, not tucking him into boiling water every 10 years. You know, you just warm it up gently. You know, he dies quietly and happens.
I think Jerry has definitely sold the indexation.
Okay, we've got a cluster of hands up. So, Roger, would you introduce yourself?
Yes. Roger Tanner, a retired middle-class pensioner living in a marginal constituency who's feeling hotter every minute. with the proposals, yeah. I can't fault the logic of your proposals or indeed the social justice that underpins it.
Is a butt coming up?
But
yeah.
I suspect there's very few oil shakes snapping up properties in and around South Wales, and a lot more people like myself that have retired on very limited incomes, but find that their houses actually worth a lot more than they were when they bought them. So an absolutely essential part of your package, seems to me, is this element where a charge can be made on the property to mitigate the fact that you have a lot of people in large houses that will not be able to pay the higher rate of tax. But as you say, it could be a charge on the property. However, how that would work, I'm not quite sure who would be entitled to it. Could not let everybody defer their council tax and pay a charge of the property instead. So you're into this. Would it be just old widows, or would women, elderly women who unfortunately have a living husband, be penalised compared to them? So I know it would not benefit me, but I buy into the whole concept of a comprehensive tax base and social justice and the logic of it all. I can see problems in its implementation in that essential element of, you know, not actually forcing retired people out of their homes, but giving them another option.
Okay, I'd like to take a cluster of questions, please. Josh, would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, just...
introduce yourself, please.
Sorry, Josh Myers from the Federation of Small Businesses. We've talked about council tax. The other sort of pillar of local government finance is non-domestic rates. I want to get Jerry's position or point of view on the read across, because many of the issues are actually quite similar, particularly when we talk about things like revaluation. You know, the revaluation for business rates was last done in 2008, pre-recession, and many businesses see that as a reason for criticising the current business rates regime. So is there potential for things like indexation to form a part of the business rates dialogue as well going forward?
Okay, Sean, do you want to ask a question?
My name's Sean Kayak, I'm the county councillor from Carmarthen, and I'm also a middle class pensioner, and I'm not a widow because I gave my ex the option to leave. But I do live in a large house, and interesting, I don't own it, and I think that this would actually have a really bad effect on people who rent, because we're going to end up paying it, you know. And I think it's there's that as well. I mean, I hope you understand now about the 25% reduction, which is all to do with the fact that we pretend that the council tax is actually to provide services to people. And I think a reaction to the poll tax, because when we actually decided it was on the number of adults we serviced, that didn't work very well either. And I think we have got a big problem, firstly with introducing an obvious property tax, but also the fact that the revenue support grant is the biggest income. And most people do think the council tax supports finances the council. But we're looking at reducing revenue support grants and the council tax being the only way of putting it up, even the small amounts it's put up at the moment, being the only way to counteract the loss of income. And we're also, I think, I don't know the personal finances of the other 21 authorities, but we're also in a lot of debt, which we're carrying on into the future. And that's not very comforting at all. I mean, we have we're a smallish population council. We have a half a billion income, and we have much more than quarter of a billion in debt and rising. And like the United Kingdom, I think we're getting into quite interesting territory, and increasing the amount of borrowing is probably not going to help in the long term. And I think that people don't really realise the other things about this. Interesting, the landfill tax. I think we're amongst a group of authorities who think we're not going to be paying anything like that because we're going to burn it all in the incinerator. Property values in my area are certainly more going down than up. So if we started talking about property values, people would want rebates. I think that the political cowardice is pretty high, because we certainly don't want to rock the boat when we are doing some very nasty things to people's services. And so I think that generally councillors are going to be cowards in this. And it's not, I think the whole system isn't integrated in any way. I think you're right that we've got to think of taxation as a whole. But we don't even know, because of the uncertainties, what exactly local authorities are going to do. You know, are we going to be integrating with health and all this, and trying to I don't know whether it is going to be providing any extra amenities and facilities, really, in the end, because we're not doing. So really what I'd like to know is, do you think this is actually sellable, for a start, and how integrated are we going to make it, and with changing circumstances? And also, but one thing I'd like to add is, what if people can't pay, because our arrears are going up on the council taxes we have already?
Okay, lots of points there. What I want to do is take for a few more contributions, give the panel all a chance to respond, and then we'll break for lunch. So there's a lady in the middle, if you can introduce yourself, please.
Hi, Katie James, I'm from Camry. As you can imagine, I'm quite concerned about the local lady living on the road, and with this small income. But I want to echo this lady's point about less and less people are owning houses in Wales now, more and more are renting. And as we've seen now with the bedroom tax, it's had a massive effect on the properties available. And some people are living in properties because that's what's available in their area, rather than because that's through choice. And one of the things that has a massive effect on the value of the property is the number of bedrooms. So if you have a lot of children or you have elderly people living with you, you might be living in a higher value property. The same is true of bungalows. Bungalows are higher value than houses. But normally, people living in bungalows are elderly or disabled. So if you have several children or elderly living with you, or disabled children who require a room of their own, there's a risk that of people being overcrowded and not being able to pay. And of course, if you rent your property, you wouldn't be able to stack that charge when the property is sold. So those are just a couple of my concerns.
Okay.
Mike Cuddy, leader of a local town council. Very much hope that will be more innovation for town councils if Williams comes to pass. But my question is a couple of us put in submissions to the Silk Commission on land value tax, which is the logical extension of this It's high on difficulty, very good on hitting wealth rather than jobs and initiative. And we argue that one included Mark Drakeford, I think, that and there should be at least be a pilot starting with the business rate side of things. So in considering innovation, should we include this as well?
Okay, any final questions from the floor before we...
Robert Brin-Jones. The stumbling block seems to be over the point in your paper, which is asset-rich income poor. You alluded to widows, but there are many other situations which people are income poor. Are they all going to qualify for an exemption? And if not, why not? That seems to be where the political difficulty is. And I thought your point about families that break up requires a reply.
Okay, well, Jerry can have the final word as the prerogative of the guy who's done all the work on this. Any final questions before I ask the panel to respond? No, Susie, do you want to give your response to any or hopefully not all of those questions?
I'm glad you raised the issue of business rates, I think, because, of course, people in small businesses tend to be real people who live in houses, and very often, certainly in my experience, they can be living in combined properties as well. I'm thinking of particular constituents of mine who have a property where they pay residential rates on the upper floors and commercial rates on the lower floors. And I'm not quite sure how properties like that might fall into this plan. I mean, I'm sure there will be a way to do it, but it doesn't seem to have been considered. The issue of spare room subsidy, I think, I do appreciate what you're saying, but I think it's quite different from what we're talking about here. It speaks more closely, I think, to the question of the exemptions or the reliefs against a local tax, whatever it looks like. And I'm pleased that you reiterated my point on how families look and why it's too easy to say something is just a property tax or just a wealth tax or just a tax on income, particularly when I think this gentleman indicated very often you have acquired your wealth by income that's been taxed already. I can't remember some of the other questions, sorry.
Delightfully pithy, you have my thanks. John.
Thanks, Lee. I think that question on business rates is quite important because there is a read across between the two taxes, and I think maybe some of the solutions that Jerry's suggesting here, some of the changes certainly have general applicability. There's nothing worse than a 5-year, 10-year, 15-year revaluations. As I said, they're quite painful. We learned that from the revaluation in 2005-06, the very fact that as Jerry mentioned, that the council tax in England is based on a tax base last revalued in 1991 tells you how politically sensitive it is, and I suppose that kind of ties into the question about is it sellable? Yes, but only with the only if you address the point that Cathy Owen made about getting a kind of buy-in across the board, really. Here, I think there are a number of other issues were raised there about asset-rich and poor. Susie, that linked to the point Susie made about households that have broken up, and I think that there's always the opportunity through now a devolved system of council tax rebates that you could. Address that through the rebate system, if not the system of exemptions and discounts.
Okay, thank you, John. Peter?
Yeah, just two quick points. I think, first of all, land value taxation, very much in favour of looking at that in terms of business rates, particularly as a fairer way of doing that. I think the whole key to this reform is going to be in the exemptions and in the phasing in of it. I mean, some of the issues which have been raised about problems around, so already applied to the existing council tax, but not, I don't think it's a proposal to change the nature of council tax, just the way it's applied. So I still say we should look at it, but I think you're right, there are a lot of issues which do need to be addressed, and the King Coyd issue, the retired pensioner in a middle class marginal constituency is certainly one which will exercise everyone's minds as part of this.
From this day forward, let her be known as the King Coyd widow.
Yes.
Okay. Jerry, to finish.
Right. number of good points. I mean, first of all, if we do operate a roll-up approach, if we're able to say, okay, you don't have to pay it, but it then becomes a charge on the property, you're absolutely right. There need to be some income criteria for, you know, for that. You couldn't allow everybody to do it. Otherwise the government would be asset rich and income poor. would have all this money owed to it, but it wouldn't have any income. So, absolutely, you've got to have some income criterion for being eligible for the roll up. I haven't got that far. I haven't thought about what that ought to be. Doesn't strike me as impossible. I don't see why, in principle, one shouldn't be able to devise that. But I haven't done that. There was a very good point made. Despite my attempt to present myself as omniscient, I actually don't always think of everything in advance. And I hadn't actually thought of the problem of renters. Now, I'd make two points. First of all is this. Most houses in Wales are Band D and below. That must be true of people renting. They're going to pay lower council tax under this dispensation. So actually, rents for most people should fall. It's only people who are renting in the top part here that's a problem. Now, but I can see they are a problem. Two things to say about it. First is, if they're entitled to individual welfare benefits, they still are. So if they are entitled to housing allowance, then they'd still be covered. That would be going against my earlier argument, the government would be paying out more for them. But the government saves money as a whole because there are more people at the bottom half of that distribution than there are in the top. That's the point. So first of all, we're not stopping them receiving benefits they may need to save, they may need to receive if they're poor. If they're not poor enough to receive a benefit, do you know, I'm going to sound a bit hard-hearted here. I mean, the big argument made on behalf of the widow is it's her home. She's lived there all her life and all of that. If you're renting the place, you know, how emotionally attached are you to it? I mean, move to a house you can afford, for God's sake. You know, I mean, you're only renting. Go somewhere cheaper. I mean, I'm not sure how far one's heart is supposed to bleed here. Anyway, that's... okay, now, so, you know, there is an issue. I hadn't thought about it, but I freely admit that maybe we should think a bit more. But my point is, for really poor people, benefits are still there. Most people's council tax goes down under this dispensation. And, you know, there is a market in houses, and there's a rental market, and if you have to move, maybe you have to move. Land value tax. One of the reasons I focused on this is land value tax would require legislation in Westminster. It's not under the Welsh Government's gift to just introduce a land value tax. It could do this tomorrow. I mean, we all know why it won't. We've heard all the arguments, but it could. There's nothing here which would require any legislation. And you could make a very extensive reform of council tax that would take you towards a land tax. There's a further step that you would need legislation for. One of the things you could do here, and in fact it lies behind the numbers in these charts, I said, look, why don't we say there's a certain proportion of this that is a community charge for services. To keep the tax proportional, and this is a trick I grant you, but to keep the tax proportional to property values, all you then have to do is have a housing value allowance. So it's presentational more than real. But what you could say is, here's your tax bill. 30,000 a year is your poll tax, in effect. This is your payment for local services. Just the way that, you know, the police precept and all that is set out in your council tax now. You could set all that out, and you could then be upfront. You know, this bit is a property tax on you. But what we've done is we've given an allowance. You don't pay any property tax on the first 30,000, and then it's proportional after that. But everybody pays 30 grand or whatever it is for the tax. So you could break it up and presentationally make it a payment for local services, and people could see that, and then a proportional property tax, but with this allowance exemption at the bottom to keep the whole thing proportionate. And that's actually how I constructed these numbers. So there would be a possibility of presenting it in that way. The other question was about non-domestic rates. I think there's a case for putting those on a site value basis, yeah, so that it's the land that you pay for rather than the development. And I'm slightly surprised that in the report that the Minister of the Economics Minister commissioned, that wasn't examined in any great detail. There were a lot of other suggestions, you know, sort of good and wonderful and less good. That didn't seem to get the attention that maybe it deserves, and I do think it's worth looking at. I think it's got more relevance to non-domestic rates than it has to houses, actually.
I think we'll leave it there. Thank you, Jerry. It's an impossible job to try and answer all of those in depth. But what we're hoping today is to kick an idea out there, and there are lots of significant people in the room who can have a role in taking this debate forward, and we'd very much like the chance to work with you to refine these proposals and to build a coalition, if there is a will for it, to try and get further airing for these ideas. That, after all, is what the IWA is for. As I said earlier, we are an independent, charitable body, and we rely on your support to do events like this, to produce papers like this, to air thoughts like this.